Hey, and welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski, and I got my co-host here, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr.,
hey,
the super endocrinologist. Look, today we're going to be talking about all about your thyroid and diets to try to improve it, which can be extremely interesting because there's a lot of people out there pushing diets for thyroid health. And thyroid health can fall under a few different things because some people can have Hashimoto's like myself. I have the Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune form of hypothyroidism.
Which is amazing because nobody in our family else has Hashimoto's.
No, it must be from all the fluoride from the Grand Rapids water, but I'm just joking.
Well, we just got sued by Grand Rapids. the mayor just
and,
told me.
Well, and then there's Graves' disease. Graves' disease, which is hyperactive. So I have hypothyroidism, hypoactive. And there's multiple forms of hypoactive hypothyroidism, but in first world developed countries, it's mostly Hashimoto's, autoimmune. But then there's Graves' disease, which is an autoimmune hyperactive hyperthyroidism. And there's other types of hyperthyroidism as well that we can slightly touch upon. So we're going to talk about this idea that you can fix or heal your thyroid based on your diet. So what do you have to say about that, Dr. Carl?
All right. Well, first of all, I think we do have to talk about what does the thyroid even do, you know, which you can talk about your experience.
What does it all mean, Basil?
Louise, what does it all mean? So, you know, For the patients, I tell patients our thyroid is our heat metabolism hormone. If you listened to our last talk on adrenal fatigue, you heard us talk about the hypothalamus and the pituitary. Well, the pituitary makes your thyroid stimulating hormone, the TSH, that is actually the best test for knowing if you have a chronic issue with your actual thyroid, despite what some people out there like to push and sell. But it basically stimulates your thyroid cells to produce T4 and a little bit of T3. Those are the thyroid hormones that go into the nuclei of cells all over our body and works on proteins and gets, I'd like to tell them, it gets things churning and burning, you know, our heat metabolism hormone. So if you don't have enough thyroid hormone.
Controls all of our metabolism.
It's your metabolic hormone. So if you don't have enough thyroid hormone, the common symptoms are you might have a little cold intolerance, dry skin, brittle hair, hair loss, reduced bowel movement frequency, and of course fatigue, just like we talked about in the adrenal fatigue discussion. And if you have too much, people often present with, you know, they'll lose weight despite the higher appetite. They have heart racing, tremors. They feel hot when they shouldn't feel hot. Those antibodies, if it's from Graves, they might play a role with growth factors behind the eyes and make your eyes bulge out and cause eye problems. There's some other rare conditions with that. You might have increased bowel movement frequency. And so these autoimmune causes of thyroid dysfunction are the most common that we deal with in the United States and are the ones that people think are actually the most related to diet, which is actually ironic because in other parts of the world, iodine deficiency is the common cause of goiter and hypothyroidism. And when we talk about diet, there's a mineral called selenium that's also very important for the thyroid function. And there are parts of the world that are more selenium deficient in the soil where that may play even more of a role. But you know, what we hear about a lot, I'll bet you hear maybe even more than I do, is all these different autoimmune protocols to help people with these autoimmune thyroid dysfunctions. And so is thyroid truly a trigger of, you know, say Hashimoto's, the common cause of hypothyroidism?
Is diet a trigger? Is diet a trigger?
Yeah, what did I say?
Yes, you said thyroid. Doesn't matter. Is diet a trigger of Hashimoto's?
You know what I mean? There's not, you know, so certainly we have a genetic predisposition, like apparently you did, even though nobody else has it. And there are environmental triggers that probably cause this, but there's no evidence that I've been able to find that diet is a trigger per se of autoimmune hypothyroidism. Iodine deficiency, sure. By the way, the only people I've seen with iodine deficiency are those who decided to go pure organic vegan and they start using Himalayan sea salt or pink salt and they don't use the iodized salt that we use in the United States. So they kind of gave themselves hypothyroidism.
Yeah, I've seen that a couple times. So yeah, my story is it was medical school. I was feeling a little bit tired. Everybody was taking Adderall and able to study, and I wasn't able to.
Everyone's hopped up on Adderall.
Right. I was like, can I get some Adderall to my doctor? Like, well, let's just test your thyroid just to make sure. I'm like, all right, sure. And my TSH was like 6, and I was like, that's kind of weird. Usually, you know, when we diagnose overt hypothyroidism, the TSH is usually over 10. But I was kind of in the subclinical range where my TSH was elevated, so the TSH comes from the brain and stimulates your thyroid. It goes from your brain, goes to your neck, stimulates your thyroid. So my TSH was elevated. It was kind of yelling at my thyroid, hey, you better work a little bit harder, which means that maybe my thyroid wasn't working so well. So I was like, well, you know what? I've been drinking a lot of green tea, and green tea has a lot of fluoride, and fluoride can block some of the production if you have way too much of it. Some of it can block that production of thyroid. So I'm like, let me just pull back on the green tea. And I changed a few other things. The next time I tested, it was a little bit more elevated. My free T4 was on that low range of normal. And I was definitely not feeling great. And I was like, check my antibodies. And my TPO, thyroid peroxidase antibodies, were elevated. And those are the common marker you check for an autoimmune process towards, known as for Hashimoto's. That's the common marker for Hashimoto's.
For what that's worth, because I know a lot of people always want to check their antibodies and then they want to monitor them, that we'll have to discuss coming up. We don't always have to do that because if someone just develops primary, meaning their hypothyroidism, that their thyroid's not working in the United States, if there's not some other obvious reason, it's statistically just presumed to be Hashimoto's or autoimmune thyroiditis.
Yeah, I personally like to know the underlying cause just to be like, okay, because there's so many people using not like sea salt now that I'm like,
well, that's
right. I'm like, I want to confirm this.
Yeah, we almost always do. I don't want people to get like all upset with their doctors if they right. don't do and they just say, because I mean, we certainly probably do, especially in endocrine, but it's not necessary.
Yeah, we see a certain population. I also see changes in their thyroid because of chronic dieting to where it's like, okay, I want to know if an autoimmune process is going on here. So I tend to do it. It was interesting though. It was also brought up in the front of class during neurology lab and in front of whatever, 180 people we had, right in the lecture hall, and they were going to test all my reflexes. And they were testing my reflexes, and they were a little bit diminished and delayed. And the neurologist was like, God, this is really weird. And he was like, all right, you need to get out of here. We need another test subject down here. And I was kind of like, what? And this was before I got diagnosed. The other weird thing was my skin was starting to turn yellow. And of course, I was eating a lot of pumpkin at the time, which has a lot of beta carotene.
That was back during our pumpkin phase.
Yeah, I had a pumpkin face, but this is kind of goes into how thyroid is. It's our metabolism hormone. We have so many metabolic processes in our body. One of the things that people present as is elevated cholesterol levels because thyroid controls the metabolism of our LDL receptor, which basically recycles our cholesterol. So it also helps every metabolic process. So. Also with the conversion of beta carotene too. So anyway, my skin was yellow. I had delayed reflexes. TSH was elevating and I was kind of tired, but I was like, I don't know. I'm in med school, whatever. Maybe I have adrenal fatigue. Not really. Please refer back to our adrenal fatigue podcast. But got the antibodies. They're elevated. And I was like, yeah, weird. So we started me on a little dose of Synthroid. But you know what? I tried every guru thing that was out there. I've cut out. I don't actually eat gluten. I think I might be predisposed to celiac disease as well. I have some of the genetic markers for that. So I don't actually eat gluten. I've had a intestinal biopsies that were negative, but I've had a few antibody tests that were questionable in the past. But I've cut out gluten. I've done all the things. And
this is another one where you used to think that all of my low carb, extremely high gluten little nuggets that I like to eat, like tortillas and stuff, you used to think that was going to cause me to have hypothyroidism, remember?
No, you do. You probably have it. You're on your way. I'm pretty sure those lavash breads, they actually inject gluten into these things.
They're pure gluten.
To make them like...
I love them. I eat a ton of gluten.
They make them nice and gooey. It's the gluten is nice. It's what gives bread its kind of soft thing. And so then they can take out some of these.
But it's high fiber.
Yeah. It has more protein with fewer net carbohydrates. Anyway, I was eating a lot of this stuff too. I was convinced. And you know what? Now the thing is, we should say though, when you say that we're not sure if food causes it or what, it may be that you have some sort of trigger, but it doesn't matter. Once you're triggered to then stop the attack and stop the progression of your thyroid, of your body killing your own thyroid, there has not been anything out there that I have seen that actually stops the destruction of your thyroid. There are things that will lower your thyroid antibodies, the TPO antibodies, but nothing's been shown that I know of that actually slows the progression or halts the progression and sure as heck doesn't reverse the disease. I'm now on a whopping dose of thyroid replacement. My thyroid's dead. It's gone. It's a has-been, just like my athletic career. Down the tubes. Anyway, the reason this is an important discussion is because I've done everything for myself. I've gone through that same patient journey, very frustrating, been on medicine since 2007, so now 15 years. I've missed one dose, by the way, one dose. I'm kind of proud of that. 15 years. That's
amazing.
I don't know. Do the math. 365 times 15. Yeah, that's amazing.
Oh my God.
I'm a good patient.
Well, so yeah.
Not really. I'm kind of a hypochondriac.
So when you know, we talk about autoimmune diseases running together, by the way. And so Hashimoto's is very common. It's thought that maybe around 15% of females in the United States actually have Hashimoto's. And by the way, it doesn't guarantee that you end up with hypothyroidism. There's something like a 5% annual chance of becoming hypothyroid if you have Hashimoto's. So there are plenty of people who have Hashimoto's but don't actually have thyroid disease, by the way. But if that's ever figured out, you should get it checked every year.
Do they have certain symptoms? Do they have symptoms? Because this is what they'll say. They have increased symptoms of depression and fatigue without having hypothyroidism. Is that possible?
Yeah, but that's not very common. I mean,
my patients swear.
Yeah,
I don't
so
know. They swear
most of the time that doesn't happen. But that's a whole different. There may be other autoimmune things going on. But anyways, the point is, if you have it, whether you have hypothyroidism or not, you are at risk of other autoimmune diseases. So the one thing, going back to this whole gluten discussion, is celiac disease is pretty rare. A lot of people go gluten free, and there's a huge marketing campaign for it. First of all, if you ever do go gluten free, just shop the periphery of the store instead of the processed, refined gluten free aisle. They're just making money off of giving you more calories that are unnecessary. But
yeah, but they're yummy.
Yeah, they are. If you do have celiac and Hashimoto's, that's where that probably has the really only great evidence of. Yeah, you really do need to go gluten-free, and it may actually more dramatically reduce your antibody levels than any of these other things that we'll discuss as far as things that can reduce the antibody levels. But again, like you said, nothing's ever found to be curative of Hashimoto's and hypothyroidism. That's the real critical issue.
What you'll see anecdotes. So there's a pharmacist that's pushing her little thyroid healing plan. There's all sorts of people out there pushing their books and all sorts of stuff. My patients, I have had tons of patients grab them. They've done all the protocols. They've done everything. I've had hundreds of patients.
I just had one today.
Yeah, hundreds of patients that have done all the protocols. Nothing has ever worked. And this doesn't mean that nothing works. It's not evidence. Absence of evidence isn't evidence of absence. But it's possible there is something out there. But I have a feeling it's going to be some sort of immunological, biological drug or something that we're going to have to.
But you know what? Here's a key lesson that I think both of us and most doctors probably should tell everyone is that most of these diets that are out there that the gurus are selling for a lot of money, do you ever notice that they're just like less processed, less refined, whole food pattern diets? And the thing is, that type of dietary change is good for everybody, for what ails you. And people always feel better on less refined, less processed, more whole food-based dietary plans. And so that doesn't mean that the diets are bad. It just means that we need everyone to improve our dietary efforts and do better quality diets, because that's good anyways.
Right. It's good to understand what's helping what, like what's causing what, because like if again it goes back to the adrenal fatigue discussion where, yes, lifestyle is great. We're lifestyle zealot doctors. We push exercise, we push proper nutrition patterns, dietary patterns, and sleep. So if you think you fixed your thyroid and go tell your friend that you can fix your thyroid with diet, you just perpetuated harm. And this is why we're doing this podcast. So we cut out gluten if you have celiac disease. Now, it is important, I will say, before you start going out and cutting out gluten, before you start cutting out gluten, it's very important to actually check your antibodies for celiac, because if you cut out gluten, they will be negative. It's how you treat celiac disease, and your celiac antibodies will not be elevated after you cut out gluten. So then you could get a false negative. So before you start doing that, you might as well go check if you want to try that.
We're not giving medical advice. Just discuss it with your doctor.
No, discuss it with your doctor. But that's, I would say that.
But to be fair though, you know, Spence, we get a lot of people that do this, right? They go, I cut out the gluten and all these other things and I feel better. So on the other hand, I tell people, well, look, if you seem intolerant to some sort of food anyways, and you feel better by, you know, people do elimination diets to figure out what their issues are with dietary intolerances, right? If people are intolerant to certain stuff, I don't know that we need to test for it, because they, you know, it's kind of like, ooh, doc, when I do this, it hurts. And the doc says, well, then don't do that. You know, if you're intolerant to a specific like food, I don't know that it necessarily has to be diagnosed, because there's false issues with those antibodies and stuff too. So that could be debatable, I think, personally.
Yeah, debatable. I would say the only caution is if you go undiagnosed celiac and you kind of get it once in a while, but it's not enough to show the antibodies and you have this underlying cell. I don't know. It's debatable. Either way, discuss with your doctor. Who cares?
Yeah, no, you're right. No, that's true. Because if you do truly, really have it, it would be good to know so you can be really intense with your efforts and, but I'll tell you what, the reason we end up looking for celiac, usually it's other stuff going on. And we're like, what is going on? You know, in my world, you know, we get, osteoporosis, vitamin D deficiency, the hypocalcemia stuff. You know, a lot of times people with weird symptoms and they have Hashimoto's, we screen a lot of celiac. So then I do say, I tell them to load up on their gluten and then we test them. Of course, definitively to diagnose that we need our gastroenterology partners to do biopsies and stuff. So that's
I had that done, by the way. It was kind of interesting, but So then there's other things. You'll see people talk about this, the brassica, the foods, the broccolis, the cauliflower, the kale, the bok choy. Yes, these things have what are called goitrogens. These things,
the bok choy is the greater.
We love bok choy. By the way, there's a case report out there, a few case reports, but there's a case report of someone ate like a couple pounds of just raw bok choy, I think every single day.
It was a lady, and she was in China, I think, wasn't she? It was a lady in China, I think.
Maybe you can describe. There's something called a myxedema coma. It's where you're just completely overtly hypothyroid. It's a very dangerous thing. But she, with these goitrogens, you technically can block their thyroid production, but it takes an excessive amount, more than what normal people would eat.
And what's too bad about that is that those foods are healthy. We want people eating their broccoli and their cabbage and their bok choy and stuff in normal amounts. Just don't eat your weight's worth in it.
Okay. So what's in a normal? Because the quacks are going to say you need to cut out these foods, broccoli, cauliflower, kale, Brussels sprouts, bok choy, freaking bok choy and cabbages. And so what would be a normal? Honestly, if you're getting 4 or 5 servings a day of that, and I believe there's a difference whether you cook it or not cook it too. Raw is going to have a higher effect. I think you're going to be okay with, you know, a few servings, up to 5 servings per day. I haven't seen any evidence to show that in that normal intake, you're going to have, there may be slight changes, variations, but it's not until you start eating excessive amounts, 10, 20 servings of these things per day. The other thing is, if you have hypothyroidism, you know, you don't have to cut those foods out. You take your medicine, you take your replacement dose, and if you start eating more of that, you tell your doctor and say, hey, could we check my labs? And then you just adjust. And it's similar to when people are on Coumadin for blood thinners and they're eating vitamin K. People said, don't eat any of these vitamin K containing foods. And it's like, no, you just want to stay consistent with what you're eating. So
consistency is
goitrogen.
Key. Yeah. You know, that's a great point, Spencer, for the people who are on thyroid hormone, especially. Boy, just keep taking your thyroid hormone consistently. I mean,
yeah. So the other common foods that we see, so it's usually gluten, soy. Soy is another one. Soy is another what people would call a goitrogen, and same kind of thing. Just stay consistent. If you start eating a ton of edamame and tofu and other soy products, you know, again, first of all, there's also people going to be talking about testosterone and all sorts of changes. A few servings a day doesn't have a clinical effect. Just a few servings a day.
It's not really clinically relevant, as it turns out. I don't think.
Unless you're eating a pound of it.
And don't eat your weight in bok choy. I mean, that's kind of the bottom line. It's such an extreme example. Yeah. So there's no reason.
Yep.
To do that.
Same things with peanuts. Yeah.
Plenty of data to support the health benefits in so many other ways of those foods. And there's so many other things that actually can cause problems to the thyroid, like medications and illnesses and stuff like that. I mean, there's other things to worry about other than otherwise pretty darn healthy foods. So, you know, reducing the refinement and processed, you know, food consumption, I think is a reasonable thing. You know, some people do want to know about the supplements and stuff like that, the minerals like the iodine. What's a little bit somewhat ironic
selenium
is that
too.
While iodine is important for thyroid and iodine deficiency is a cause of thyroid deficiency, hypothyroidism in other parts of the world, actually the rates of autoimmune thyroid disease like Hashimoto's is actually higher when you suddenly get more iodine in your diet. Especially if you've gone from one lower baseline to a higher. We talked about selenium. Selenium supplementation has been shown to reduce antibody levels a little bit, but again, not to the point of doing anything relevant. It doesn't make them go away. It doesn't solve the problem. Vitamin D, you know, vitamin D is pretty popular. You know, and there's a lot of little things that we thought vitamin D was like a miracle for a few years ago. It's kind of not panned out to be that great, but it probably does have a role in some of these autoimmunity things. It's probably reasonable to be optimized, but again, it's not going to fix the problem. That's kind of the deal with all this stuff.
I've done all of this stuff. I've done all this stuff. I've done it for my patients. I can tell you that, like, look, go to a whole food plant predominant. You don't have to cut out animal products unless you want to. A whole dietary pattern and standard lifestyle, and then just take the replacement. Like, I don't spin your wheels on these other books that promise to cure your thyroid disease. I've done it. My patients have done it. I've prescribed the low dose naltrexones to everybody because I'm like, okay, I can see the hypothetical. The data was never there, but I've said it's pretty safe, so we can try it. We've tried all these things, nothing. The thing is, once your antibodies are elevated, even if you lower them, the destruction is occurring and have not seen anything to stop the destruction. Once you're on replacement, unless you were misdiagnosed, which we see all the time, you're probably not going to be able to come off. We do see it all the time where people are misdiagnosed and we can take them off their thyroid and their thyroid's work just fine. But if you have Hashimoto's, your thyroid's not working, very likely you're stuck on the medicine. It's okay. It's the easiest medicine to take, honestly. So we're not trying to be party poopers. We're just trying to make you not spin your wheel.
Yeah, you mentioned the plant-based thing. The last time I wrote a little article that is on our docswholift.com website about the diet and thyroid, if you want to read more about this, some of the bullet points from, it's a couple years old now. It was a cross-sectional study in 2020. So, not the greatest data by any means, but it looked at dietary habits and the relationship of thyroid autoimmunity. And the headline, of course, had something to do with, animal products might put you at more increased risk of hypothyroidism compared to, sort of the plant-based, more Mediterranean pattern, which, it certainly wasn't a great trial. They were dietary questionnaires. It just sort of suggested that the higher intake frequencies of animal foods in those with Hashimoto's, compared with controls, who reported higher intake frequencies of, guess what? Things like legumes, fruits, vegetables, and nuts, many things that people think are goitrogen. So I honestly don't think there's that much to take from that. I wouldn't tell people to, cut out their animal products as long as they're getting good quality, low fat proteins. But, there's always something to it. Take it for a grain of salt, iodized salt, preferably, if you will. And, basically, I think the bottom line is, eat good whole food based diets the best you can, less refined processed foods. And, if there are concerns of thyroid stuff, discuss it with your physician.
Yeah. And this, I think the same goes for Graves' disease. But with selenium, though, there is a little bit more data for selenium and Graves' disease.
Yeah. Specifically with Graves' eye disease. So remember at the beginning, I mentioned how the Graves' antibodies play a role with growth factors, insulin-like growth factors in behind the eye. Selenium may, there are data that selenium supplementation improved Graves' eye disease. Now that may be, maybe more for people who have selenium deficiency, and especially in selenium deficient, endemic areas. But, I tell people about it because it's a pretty harmless thing. Some people say that too much selenium has some concerns. And as kind of a non-medicinal guy, I like to tell people to eat their Brazil nuts. That's like that's my selenium medicine of choice. But it's something to consider. But not something I would stress about. Talk to your physician about it. Really, I do talk to patients about that.
That's what I did. I did four Brazil nuts because it was around the therapeutic dose of selenium.
That's right.
Per day to lower TPO antibodies. I cut out gluten. I did all the different things, and I've had some variations in my TPO antibodies, but my thyroid just decided to die regardless. So here I am on my whopping dose. I feel fine. And we
don't force your doctor to keep monitoring your antibody levels. That's kind of a waste of resources and stuff. It's not going to hurt anybody probably, but it's not helpful.
I do it for my patients, otherwise they yell at me. So I'm just like, okay, fine, here, take it. But a lot of
well, I do too. So for any of you listening, I do, but it's not helping really anything. But sometimes I will tell them, for academic purposes, I'll do it.
I know.
So I've had a couple where they're like, let's just see, and I'm like, yeah, all right, what the heck, let's see,
because
I'm interested too. Because if we could make it go away, then that's great. We're not like trying to tell people we don't want to do it. We want to find a way. I'm sure the people who are doing the real research, they're the ones publishing the studies. They want to find it, the answer, to see if we can find a way.
Right. So here's the scenario. Here's the scenario, though. If you haven't progressed to hypothyroidism and you maybe get your antibodies down, maybe you will decrease your risk of progression. We haven't proven it yet. It hasn't been shown just yet. We don't have the data. So maybe there's something out there, but
if somebody knows of something, please let us know. I worked on these articles a couple years ago with, I was the nutrition guy, and I worked with the thyroid specialists. And between all of us, we could not find anything to tell people to do anything really much different, than what we generally do. So enjoy your gluten.
All right. So that's it. Enjoy your glutens. All right. Well, till next episode, thanks for joining us. Please subscribe. Please subscribe. Share with your friends. and give us a good rating if you don't mind.
Please.
Till next time.